Welcome to Wellness Radio with Dr. Jeanette Gallagher as your host. Her show discusses topics of health, wellness, and spirituality and is about discovering your place in this great universe from your cells to the cosmos. Along with her guest, in casual conversation, she strives to ask the difficult questions that may be holding you back from a vibrant life and shares new ideas that may inspire you to make a change in your life that you only can see in your dreams. And now, here is Dr. Jeanette Gallagher.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Wellness Radio. This is Dr. Jeanette Gallagher, and it's a pleasure to have you with us here this evening. Tonight, we are going to be talking about a book by Mark Diehl, Stealing Cinderella, How I Became an International Fugitive for Love, A True Story. Mark is going to be sharing his story of finding love in Korea, the adventures, the ups, the downs, the danger. And many times we say, I didn't know how history, another country, and other ways that people do things really played out when really we just think about the life we are leading. How can we see how things are so different for so many others? And we say, I'd love to hear this story. Well, in Mark's book, on every single page, you turn it. It is a definitely page turner. You get involved in it, and you say, there's something here. I never knew that. And you feel as if you are within the pages. And truly, Mark's going to be sharing his story with us today and sharing how he walked through this story. And I'll tell you, it is not something you've ever heard before. And Mark, thank you so much for joining us today. It's a pleasure to have you with us.
Oh, thank you. I'm thrilled to be here.
Oh, Mark, I'm so glad to have you share this story because we think about love and adventure. You know, I mean, we as Americans, we think it's simple. It's this, it's that. You know, there's no big deal in how things play out. Yet your story in Korea is like, no, it can't be. That's not really what happened. It's almost as if, you know, it's like really you took the best mystery movie and just kind of weaved it into your life, yes?
Well, yes, thank you. it does have a little bit of everything. We had violence. We had a struggle against pretty much the entire society when we were there, an escape in the middle of the night. It has a lot of drama, that's for sure.
Yeah, it's really, when we think of love stories, we say, oh, you know, people, you know, are fighting against things, but yours seemed to be such a continuous journey that you could have been taken out many times. And I don't know how, I mean, like, did you ever want to give up?
You know, it never occurred to us. And I think the reason is, in spite of the fact that we came from really different backgrounds, I mean, Jennifer is actually from South Korea, and she came from a very influential family there. And I grew up alone with my borderline personality mother. But we had a lot in common because both of our families had sort of discounted us and marginalized us. And finally, when we met, we had somebody who said, I'm going to stand with you. I'm going to be that one thing that you never had anywhere else. And so even though we had all this stuff, we already had found something where it was like, I don't want to ever give this up because this is the only person who has ever truly supported me and had my back.
It's almost as if I think you were almost on a journey right at the beginning. It clicked when you said you're seeking self in reflection. In other words, you said she had that similar thing she was looking for, you know. So when you're seeking self in a reflection of someone else, it's sort of like, wow, you know, you form a great bond, yes?
Yeah, I mean, we were the strength that we each had missed growing up.
Right.
And even when they, you know, they threw a lot at us, we had to hide our relationship. We had our employer pull us aside and say that our interracial relationship was shameful and it was bringing shame on the school where we were teaching together. So we had to stop it. We had to lie to them and hide our relationship for about another, I don't know, 8 months after that, before the whole thing blew up. Every step of the way, it was a struggle. We were harassed on the street. for being together. I had people tell me, oh, if you want a woman, you can go down by the military bases and there's prostitutes down there, but you can't touch one of these good women from a good family because, you know, that'll disrupt the harmony of society here.
Right. Do you think that, when was this story, did it first start? So you went to Korea and you went there to work, right? And even if you look back at 1993, in the U.S., interracial things were just starting to be very much commonplace. And, interreligions, inter-whatever, you know, you wanted to call. In other words, the barriers and the boundaries started to come down. Do you think that sometimes Americans assume that those same barriers have come down across the globe, or do they think that it's just in America?
Yeah, I definitely. I mean, that is the number one question that I get asked when I talk about the book or when people tell me they've read the book is, well, is it still like that now? Because obviously they've had a lot more exposure to us and they would have learned a lot more about us. And so obviously they'd want to be like us. And I guess I would say that some of that is true. I mean, Jennifer, we think, was probably more open to other societies than the average person because she grew up reading classic novels from other countries, from the West. You know, she read the Brontes and she read, Mark Twain and all of these other authors throughout her childhood because her parents had this collection of translated works. So, you know, you could say, well, okay, they're more open now because they've been exposed to us. But the other thing is these traditions last because they serve a purpose there. So is it whole society more open or is it just maybe the middle class? You know, Jennifer was upper class and they had a lot, you know, these families had been building these family names for hundreds of years. And so for me to come in and say, I'm going to take this one when they had planned, we're going to have her married off to this kind of person and this kind of family. And it's going to build our family name. And then when our son gets married, they'll see that we've married into these other families. And it was this whole big process. And that had been going on literally for hundreds of years. And I came in and threw a wrench in it.
Right. Well, you know, I think when we go to other countries, you know, we look at the birth of the internet, you know, in the late 90s. And, you know, you could talk to kids nowadays and they're like, they can't conceive of a world without it, you know. And I'm in my 60s and, you know, when I think of the birth of the internet, I think of all of a sudden we got connected to the rest of the earth as we know it. And in essence, when we started to become connected to the rest of the countries, did we learn things that we believed were right or wrong and or acceptable or not? And what are we really basing our judgment on? In other words, if you're living in Korea, you know, and you're teaching there and you find this person to have a relationship with, this other woman, and you're really, are you basing it upon your beliefs and your judgments that you grew up with that are part of your heritage and bringing that to her country when in essence you're competing with theirs? And it's sort of like, it's almost like it's two entities are just existing and in conflict all the time, yes?
Oh, yeah. I mean, and frankly, this has been a problem since the 50s, right? Because we've had 30,000 troops there forever, and there's been cultural clashes. And, of course, you know, our soldiers are doing an important job for the United States, but they're not always the best ambassadors for us. They get in a lot of trouble. So there was a lot of this that was going on for a really long time, too. And they, you know, everybody had preconceived notions. And mine, I will admit, I came with an American notion that self-determination is really important.
Right.
That people should have the ability to choose their own destiny. And that's just kind of, when I talk to most Americans, that seems to be something that we have in common is, you know, you have the right to choose your life, to build the life that you want. Mm-hmm. And that was not, if that's the foundation for your belief system and you put a lot of weight on that and you go to a country where that's not just not part of the deal, it's actually considered sort of childish.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because, oh, well, I have this duty, and there's so much more about your duty and your responsibility to just grit your teeth and do it. And
right.
to say, oh, I want to be in charge of my own life, or I'm fighting so that I call the book Stealing Cinderella because I took her out of the country, but I didn't steal her from herself. From my point of view, I was taking her so she could live the life she wanted, which thankfully was the life with me.
Mm-hmm.
That has been the basis of our 25 and counting year marriage. Didn't see it that way.
Do you think at times when you say about responsibility and, duty, sometimes people will say, but this is the way it is. And it's almost as if in many countries you might have a duty to the whole, a duty to the society, and it's the part you play. There is no duty to self in an individual basis. Don't you think Americans, you know, we kind of think about ourselves first, country second. In some countries, it's country first, self is way down the line.
Right. And, this was a survival mechanism back in the old days, you know, when Confucius was writing about this stuff, honor your parents because they've been alive longer. They brought you here and, you know, you have to obey them and honor your king because your king is your protector and all of this. So that the self was the least important part because you have to force yourself into this structure. And, yeah, in America, you know, we've had a lot more space and a lot more resources than most countries. And so we've been able to say, hey, you know what? The self is a really important thing.
Is it almost a conflict of the old entities of, kings, of vested, in other words, the upper hierarchies all the time? In other words, you're always on the totem pole, so to speak, in a linear existence. And when we think about that, we say, is that now starting to crumble? We see that, you know, in the U.S., you know, with the issues with politics now. But many countries, they're having a lot of conflicts. You see it on the internet, and where these hierarchies are starting to lose, or rather, their buildings are being shook. In other words, the basis that they hold their beliefs upon are starting to be shaken. Do you think that that's starting to happen?
I don't know. I kind of, when I was there, I was looking around, and it's hard to say what the structure is separate from the entity. So in other words, if you have a really structured government, for example,
right?
And you say, well, okay, this government isn't able to do all of the things that it needs to do to keep the people in a stable configuration.
Mm-hmm.
But I saw a lot of other things. I saw corporations being organized in very similar ways. When I came back, I ended up going to law school. And eventually I was working in a major multinational law firm, and it had the same kinds of things. It had all of these, you know, you think, well, okay, I'm going to get to partner and I'll be in charge. And then that's not actually true. There might be 15 levels of partner in a firm with three or four levels of an associate. So it was this top-down mechanism that was helping that organization compete in the marketplace.
Right.
And I think about things like, at one point, war was about you get your big bruisers together and you defend your little town or your hamlet or whatever because somebody's coming to take your stuff or attack your women or whatever it was. And so the biggest, toughest guys would go out and fight the other side. And then all of a sudden, there were real armies like the Romans, you know, and they've got their shields and they all line up together and somebody blows a whistle and they attack in unison. And there was this strict hierarchy that pretty much changed. Well, it did. It changed warfare forever because all of a sudden, anybody who didn't have the guys who would say, yes, sir, and run up the hill with their spear or their guns got wiped out by the ones who did. So I think if we look at like a government and we say, okay, well, this government might not be able to handle this. Well, how about a corporation? Because that's our new warfare, mm-hmm. right?
Do you think that the concept of vested interest is truly what keeps human society together? And it's just whether you are vested interest in perpetuating the old belief system or if you are interested in creating a new belief system. Doesn't that always show up?
That's very interesting because I think that's actually very related to what we were talking about before, which is the whole idea of self-determination, right? Because if you're starting a new belief system, which we did, we had the freedom, Jennifer and I had the freedom to say, we believe that what we're building together is more important than somebody else's rules on how we should behave. But even that, we did some damage, you know, like we could have hurt her brother's chances for getting the kind of marriage he was supposed to get, because now all of a sudden her family reputation is damaged because we left. So we did that. And I think all truly, you know, revolutionary kinds of ideas come from individuals who say, I think this idea has value. I think this is a new thing and I should push for it. I should fight for it.
However, can you say that you want to push forward and believe this new idea has value, but are you doing it with blinders and being a bull going through a china store and taking no prisoners or worrying about nothing else? In other words, you don't worry about roadkill. You just keep driving. Do you know what I mean? So in other words, do you take no prisoners and keep going? And not believe in some way that you're causing a wave or a ripple effect and causing damage along the way.
Right, and I think that's a totally valid thing to say about it. You know, we met each other and said, we're going to build a relationship where we can always count on each other instead of just today.
Right.
And we did have, you know, there was a society there with its own values that we were trampling on, and they made sure we knew it every single day. Every single day when we were together, somebody said something nasty to her.
Right.
And in fact, I was learning Korean, and she got me to stop it because she didn't want me to understand what people were saying to us all the time.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we decided that. And the society pushed back, and then it became a thing where, okay, well, they've upped the stakes, so how do we feel about that? Well, and every time that happened, we said, yeah, this is still what we want.
Yeah. Let's talk about the idea when people start to always say other things, and you say, is that always to hurt or to keep in place a belief, or can it be also to perpetuate and stand up and say, as you did, is it perpetually to be able to say, step out of it and exist and co-create something else where those things no longer exist in that paradigm? You know, so what you did is you actually created a new paradigm and it didn't have any attachments to the old, yes?
Well, right. And it's interesting because if I had been Korean growing up in Korean society, we wouldn't have had that option, right? Because there wouldn't have been a place for us to go.
Right.
And eventually we couldn't have survived it because the machinery, and when I talk about the social machinery, I don't just mean that people disapproved of us and our boss called us in. And I mean, at one point we had the police looking for us. And it was well known that, for example, the police, in terms of, say, battered women, would return them to their fathers or their husbands who had beaten them because that was in the interest of keeping peace in society. So eventually, if we couldn't have left, if we couldn't have come to the United States, if there wasn't that safety valve, that steam vent to let us out, which we almost didn't get out, eventually something else would have snapped. And as it was, I came very close to ending up in Korean jail. She came very close to being married against her will. So I felt it every single day, the society acting to break us up.
You know, going back to what I said in the beginning of the conversation about the reason that you two connected was the self-reflection and preservation. In other words, almost in essence, that as you went through this, you were not only fighting to have her with you, you were actually fighting in for your own self-preservation as it reflected within her and she the same. In other words, your vested interest was in each other, but your vested interest to keep self was, in other words, it had to come full circle within the two of you. It was almost as if it was a world existing. Do you know what I mean? In other words, this piece can't work, otherwise I'm not validated to be self. Didn't show up.
Yeah, and I think one big reason that we were together, in fact, is that we validated each other and,
right.
and said, you know, the stuff that you come from was not cool. And,
yeah.
you know, you should have had more of a chance to set your own destiny. And we both felt that. So, yeah, absolutely.
Let's talk for a second about how women are perceived in other cultures. I mean, you have a great story in here about how women are treated in Korea, and you saw it firsthand. And we here in America, you know, we want to go to bat when we see someone, a woman getting hurt, you know. Yet also, too, we don't even realize it, but we see a lot of women getting hurt in America, too, and don't we see people turn away? So truly, is it any different?
Well,
you know what I mean?
Yeah, I think, and I'm basing this, one reason that I was able to write this book the way I did is that I came there to be an English teacher, and I found the act of reading the book back and forth with a class of students so excruciatingly boring that I was actually a bad English teacher from the Korean point of view, and I started just talking and making everyone talk to me about things. So I got a pretty good handle on what people, and this is, again, in the early 90s, they've had a lot of exposure to other ideas. They may or may not have changed them since then. But, yeah, the idea was that everybody had their place, and that was just assigned, and that no two people were equal.
Yeah.
Everybody was either older than you and you owed them respect, or younger than you and they owed, you know, you respect. Male was given the more responsibility, right? They had to go to war, for example. Everybody in Korea, every male had to go in the army. Women were assigned the role of the traditional homemaker, subservient kind of role. And it was really interesting because at one point somebody pointed out to me that he thought Korea had better shoeshine men than the United States. And the reason was that in America, everybody's allowed to just decide their destiny. So mm-hmm. you want to be a doctor, or you want to be a physicist, or you want to be a lawyer or whatever, and you can go and chase that, and nobody tells you not to. But then we have these people who end up in jobs, and you feel like you should be a doctor, but you're a shoeshine man. And his point was, if you're a shoeshine man in Korea, that's, you understand that that's your role in life, and that's what you're supposed to do. So their idea of what women are supposed to do was that everybody has this arbitrarily assigned role in life. Right? Your parents want you to be a banker, so you're going to be a banker, for example. Mm-hmm. I had one student who really didn't want to be a banker, and I watched him go get a job. And in Korea, a job is 7 days a week, usually, you know, 12 to 15 hour days. It's just a constant work. So this kid was 23, 24, and he was going inside this bank, and he was going to do banking for the rest of his life, pretty much every minute he was awake. So when I say, oh, I'm here, I'm going to liberate Jennifer, I'm going to take her, and I'm going to let her, I'm going to help her set her own destiny, be what
right.
she wants to be. And since we've come back, she's gotten two master's degrees, and she got herself a big job in consulting. But that was my value system. And it was really interesting to see that people thought, oh, that's a childish idea. Mm-hmm. That's, you know, if you accepted your role in life, then you would be mature. Then you would be a grown up in our society. But if you struggle and you fight against it, then you're just bad. You're not doing what you're supposed to do. So a lot of that kind of idea comes into how women are perceived there too.
Right. Do you think that that comes from all of the eons? In other words, maybe they are an older existing country or older existing paradigms, you know, as they believe in the hierarchy. In other words, a king survives on all the taxes and the gold and all the blood, sweat, and tears of his serfs, you know, or his slaves, or whatever that might be, depending upon the culture. And everything comes to fruition to keep and uphold the entire thing, so that there is no concept of self, there is no human existence, there is, just as you said, you know, working 7 days a week, all those hours, it is all existing to keep the machine in place for the entities above to continue to exist.
Absolutely. This is what I came back, and I should say, I normally don't write memoir. This is my first memoir. My other books are dystopian science fiction. And mm-hmm. that is the premise of the books that I've written in sci-fi, is that actually, as our organizations get bigger, because, you know, you think about a king, and, you know, we tend to imagine
right.
a king as ruling a country the size of ours, but they mm-hmm. didn't. They didn't have, the population wasn't around that. You know, they had small little kingdoms. Even great big kings didn't have the kinds of populations to rule that our rulers today do. Mm-hmm. And the corporation is another one. Some of these corporations now are so big, they dwarf nation states. Right?
Right.
So they're bigger than most countries in the world, and they have the same kind of hierarchy, that same kind of structure. So as our population grows and as we all get filed into these organizations, whether they're governments, corporations, you know, big religious organizations, whatever they are, we have to lose something that, as individuals, we tend to really value our self-determination, for example. So I actually said, you know, many years ago, millions of years ago, ants and bees were individual little bugs, and they evolved into something new where their organization was more important than the individual. And we, in science, they call that a superorganism.
Right.
So I said, well, okay, as our organizations get bigger and more powerful, are we evolving too? Are we changing so that the individual is less important? And are we becoming a superorganism, either through our governments or our corporations or our other organizations, such that we dissolve into these organizations completely?
Right. Because, you know, with this new spiritual thing out, you know, the spiritual awakening and all of this new evolution that people are talking about, and they're truly saying, but you have free will, you have choice, you choose. And in essence, your free will and your choice is based upon the words, the energy, the frequency, the quantumness around you, that which the imprints that are in you and within you. In other words, is there ever free will and choice? Because really, are we not bound by something bigger than us or greater than us in the first place? And all truly what we're doing on the earth is, maybe are we all just ants and there's some other big tyranny that's got this thing going?
Yeah, I mean, that's an interesting question.
Yeah, because if you look at it, you know, countries, are they not just little, you know, if you look at a city, you know, and you say it's got all these different high schools and neighborhoods and communities or whatever, you know, the have-nots, this side of the tracks, that side, whatever, you know, is that not how countries look to us? If you took it, the earth, and just set it on the table, wouldn't that all just be the same?
Well, yeah, I would say that, you know, and I would say that it's probably more so than it was before. as as the organization gets bigger, your role within it has to be more narrowly defined. So, you know, if you're a sole proprietor, for example, you sell, you know, shoes or books or something, and you run your store and you have to do your inventory, you have to do your bookkeeping, you have to turn on the lights, you have to sweep the floor, you have to do everything. And the bigger your organization gets, you might have just somebody sweeping the floor, and that's all they do all day, right? So as these organizations get bigger, we become defined by them to such a degree that it becomes difficult to separate the individual out again.
So in essence, let's bring us back full circle to the beginning of our conversation about your book, Stealing Cinderella. Is it not that which there are a select few of people that may be able to find there's a path, there is an undercurrent, there is a flow, there is like the side of the bank of the river, there is a tunnel underneath, there is a path through the mountains, the area of least resistance, where you can still continue to exist, expand, and explore more things in your life without the influence of that tyranny all around? And that is that what we're all seeking?
That's an interesting, I mean, I guess I would say that, you can, if you can find that path, if you can find that tunnel,
right.
That is worth a lot of struggle. And you have to first know that it's worth a lot of struggle. And that was the neat thing that we had, was we knew right away, okay, this is worth struggling to find a way out, to try and make this a reality. I think a lot of times people find themselves in situations like that and they don't look for that one way. And I don't know what that means. Does that mean they become complacent? Does that mean they don't have faith? I don't know.
Yeah, I think sometimes we say, is that not where people are going right now, too? Because we're saying we don't want all these constructs. We want to, you know, we see people living on the grid, off the grid now. Is that not an illusion to some people? You're going, how can that even happen? That doesn't exist in this world. There's no such thing. You always need people. You need something, you know? So I think sometimes we're trying to break away. I think, in essence, the people on the planet are starting to try to know that the old ways, that old, dense, heavy energy is not where they want to be anymore. They don't want to feel under that construct, and they're trying to find their way out of it, but they just don't have a grasp on that there is fresh air above it all. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, you know, and actually when I was teaching there, and being the bad English teacher, making people have actual conversations rather than teaching out of the book.
Right.
At one point, I copied a Calvin and Hobbes cartoon. And basically, in the first panel, Calvin was saying, I hate people. When I grow up, I want to live a million miles away from anyone.
Right.
And Hobbes says, how will you live? What will you eat?
See? Yeah.
And he says, mom could come twice a day to cook, I suppose.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, that is, and then that begs the question, okay, if you're stuck in a society, now that given that we need each other, we need other people to provide for us, you know, we are not totally self-sufficient on our own as individuals. We need to interact with other people. But what if the society is incredibly strict and says that this is the only way that you're going to get that? And that was kind of what we had.
Yeah, I think the idea that when the illusions start to become a new reality, then we can start to have people start to migrate to the other part. In other words, you know, they'll start coming out of it, out of their own, you know, darkness or whatever it might be. So as we're able to do that, I'm sure you've found other people that would say, I didn't know that. And now they're learning more about their own existence. They're learning more about other things that you share with them. And their truths or their beliefs are being recreated. Don't you think that's really what we're talking about?
And I guess the flip side of that is that just because I think it's worse right? When I saw that society and I said, well, oh, you know, Jennifer's sister was an arranged marriage. They expect her brother to be an arranged marriage. They expect her to be an arranged marriage. I met 1,000 students in Korea. Not one of them chose their major in college. You know, that was all part of the parents. So, you know, it wasn't that I had these better ideas and that my ideas triumphed. Mm-hmm. It was, or that they saw my great ideas and changed and said, oh, that's the way to be. The most people that I met, and I talked to a lot of people like this over more than a year of teaching many classes a day, most people wanted that life, wanted that society, felt it had merit and value, and they didn't want it to change.
Right.
So, you know, we were outsiders, not just because we were fighting for our, what we considered to be our right to self-determination, but we were outsiders simply by believing that that was a thing that was okay to do and that the outcome of that would be good.
Do you think, in closing, Mark, do you think that by writing this book, Stealing Cinderella, you have created seeds into people's concepts? In other words, now that we have the internet, you know, this book can be around the globe. You know, anybody can hear it, read it, see it, and touch it, and be able to say, And once you do that, you've already created doubt. You've created inspiration. You can create intuitiveness. You can create almost anything, a sense of wonderment or a sense of rebellion, you know. But what it does is it's a page turner. It's a seeder. It's it turns people to start to think differently. Isn't that the purpose why we're writing so many books these days?
Yeah, I wrote the book largely because I understood their point of view, but and from their point of view, I really was a thief. I really did steal her from the whole society. And so I wrote it to say, well, okay, maybe sometimes it's okay to say, well, okay, I'll be the bad guy.
Right.
Because in that case, that was how I found the freedom. And Jennifer found the freedom to have this relationship that we valued so much, was we were able to say, okay, you think we're bad. I'm not bound by that. I'm going to still pursue my own goal for my own life. And, yeah, wouldn't that be neat if that caught on?
Yeah. I think the idea that people are saying, what am I doing for love or in another's relationship or to be with someone or to be able to even live or engage with someone or something in society around us? Sometimes people say it's a challenge and I'm not up for the work. But really, what's your book, Stealing Cinderella, is this is a workbook. This is the work that you did. This is the work that you and Jennifer did. And this is how it played out. And look at the benefits on the end. Yes?
Yeah, absolutely. We just got back from Hong Kong celebrating our 25th anniversary where we got married. It has been, every single day has been a reward for the efforts that we put in back then.
Absolutely. You know, sometimes we say, is it worth it? Yes, it's worth it. And, you know, everybody has challenges and paths, and this is definitely one of them. And it was such a great time talking to you because I think your story just gives us a different insight, a different venue to be able to reflect on. Yes?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thank you for having me.
Oh, Mark, can you share with the listeners how to find out more information about your work? That would be wonderful.
Yeah, the best way to do it is just to look it up on whatever sales site you want to go to. It's pretty much everywhere, including all the big ones like Amazon and Barnes & Noble and Target and all of those. Just type in Stealing Cinderella, and it should come up. Stealing Cinderella, How I Became an International Fugitive for Love. You can also look me up at my website, which is markddeal.com. It's D as in dog, IEHL.
Very good. Well, Mark, it was such a pleasure to have you with us. We thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
If you'd like to find out more information about Mark Diehl, again, his book is Stealing Cinderella. Please do click on the link on the bottom of today's show page for more information. You go directly to his website. Again, his website is markdiehl.com. And it truly is that it's such a great adventure story. It's about love and challenge and danger, people's belief systems, people's things that are going on in their lives we don't ever really know about, and to say, it's so interesting, maybe I too can take it up and say, I can get out of where I am, I can have a different perspective on life, I can make a change, I can do that which I would love to do. It's a little work, but we can all do it. Thank you so much for joining us today. This is Dr. Jeanette Gallagher, and until tomorrow, have a great day.
Today we discussed many life-changing concepts. Who do you turn to, and how do you know what is best when faced with a health crisis? Dr. Jeanette is a patient advocate. She listens to the patient, the doctors, and the family, clarifies the health issues and concerns, then helps the patient make the best choices going forward. If you would like help implementing change into your life and health, we can talk and see where you are stuck and how to improve the quality of your life. Check the link on the bottom of today's show page or visit drjeanettegallagher.com to schedule a phone appointment today.